Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Radio Islam International with me, Sister Faiza Munshi, on the New Horizons program. Alhamdulillah. So today, what are we talking about? We're talking about health. We're talking about health from the perspective of heart, from the Heart and Stroke Foundation, inshallah. We will have a dietitian on in a few moments. And we want to look at this topic really from many perspectives, just the general questions about, you know, the importance of understanding where weight gain and obesity affects our lifestyles. We're looking at, you know, intergenerational obesity, the fact that as perhaps as parents, you may have had parents who had a problem with obesity, then filtered down to you, and this is filtering down to your children. What is the impact of this, and what is the impact of this not just on your, like, your life and what you can wear and how you look, etc., but really on all your organs, what happens going forward. And then also just looking at, you know, I think for many of us, there's just so much of information out there. And there's so much that is going on with regard to health and wellness. And, you know, you try and follow certain guidelines, and then you get one day it's like eat a certain type of sugar, the next day it's don't eat sugar, the next day it's, you know, it's just changing all the time. So I think it's always important to keep up with what's going on, and really what the foundational the important foundations are in terms of our health. I think as a community, as a society, we're definitely not improving our health. I think there's a handful of people who are going into the sphere of improving their health to the point of where it's, you know, where they're extremely fit and they look good and they feel good and their families are healthy, etc. But the bulk, if we look at, for the most part, many people, obesity is increasing. And then also things like childhood diabetes, aspects with children being obese as well. So this is an increase because, let's be honest, I mean, there's just too much in terms of sugar, in terms of the bad types of oils, in terms of what we're eating. And that is impacting us in so many ways. And I think for many of us, we see the impact not just on our bodies, but as we get older, you see the impact on your mind, on your bones, on your, you know, on your gut. And then also with our children, we see the impact in terms of the educational, their learning, the inability to learn very well, the inability to be able to push themselves forward. So I think it's really important to understand things like the risk factors. You know, we always talk about this aspect of cardiovascular disease, obesity, but we've got to often remind ourselves, remind you as listeners, have these conversations, understand how do we tackle these things with our younger children? How do we ourselves, you know, get into a healthier space? So that's really our conversation today. I'm looking forward to it, inshallah. For now, we're going to take a break for some ads and to get my guest on, inshallah, and then we'll carry on with the program. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Radio Islam International with me, Sister Faiza Munshi, on the New Horizons program. My guest on the line is Sister Kinza Hussain. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Kinza.
Alaikum salam. Shukra for having me on the show today.
It's an absolute pleasure. So, Kinza, tell us what it is you do, what is your title, so to speak, and what are you passionate about before we start the program?
Yes, sure. So, I am a registered dietitian, and I'm at the moment I'm working for the Heart and Stroke Foundation South Africa. So my role is really just, you know, to oversee all the nutrition-related tasks at the foundation. Nutrition is a very important pillar at the foundation. The foundation is an NGO, and I've been with them for quite a few years now. I find it very rewarding. My passion lies in public health. I believe that, you know, We need to bring in good nutrition and healthy living from a very young age throughout the life course. So that's why I work for them, and that's where my passion lies.
We had a conversation, I think time goes by very quickly, it possibly was last year around this time maybe, or sometime, but we did speak about, you know, the themes that the Heart and Stroke Foundation had last year. And this, let's talk about obesity over the life course. Is this now your, you know, theme for the year? And, you know, tell us more about it, if that is what it is.
Yes. So World Obesity Day was in March, but we sort of just throughout the actual days, the 4th of March, but we actually used the entire month of March just to highlight, you know, obesity. The theme, Let's Talk About Obesity, is actually a theme that was driven by the World Obesity Federation, and we align ourselves with this global organization. Every year they come up with a different theme, but for the past few years they've really just been focusing on how obesity has been established as a disease now. You know, before people just used to take it as someone just being, you know, overweight or fat because they're not eating correctly or they're not exercising. But over the years, it's been established as a medical condition, and the roots that cause it has actually been found to be very deep, you know, from your genes to marketing to life events, biology, of course, food and how you exercise does play a role, but it's a lot deeper than that. So I think the last few years we've just been trying to get that conversation going, that it's a lot more than just being, you know, just a number on the scale. And then particularly this year, we decided to sort of just look at obesity over, you know, the life course from before the baby's even born, you know, when the baby's in the womb, right up until, you know, you grow up and you're an adult into old age. We decided to just look at this condition throughout the life course. So yes, it started off in March, but I mean, it's April now, and it's something we talk about a lot. It's a condition we bring in all our talks, all our interviews, everything that we run throughout the year, because obesity is a risk factor for heart disease and stroke. So it's something that we are always talking about.
You know, when we look at, I think we can look at our grandparents, for example, and then we look at our parents and we look at ourselves and we look at obesity rates. There's no doubt that the rate of obesity has just skyrocketed over the generation we're seeing now. And it's really important for us to understand that, because this intergenerational cycle of obesity would affect everyone, right? From families, infants, children, adolescents. Let's talk through that. There seems to be a bit of a background sound on your speaker, Kinza. I'm not sure.
Is that better now, maybe?
Okay, let's see. Okay. So we're just talking about, sorry about that. So we're talking about the intergenerational cycle. I mean, I think in times gone by, we didn't have all these, you know, the ease with which sugar could be, you know, put into our bodies like we do now. But let's talk about the intergenerational cycle of obesity. Where does that lead us? Where are we sitting at? And how is it impacting, you know, our kids? And how is it going to impact if we don't take note of it now? What are we going to see going forward?
Yes, no. So you raised a very important point. I think it has become a lot more easy now to just sort of buy anything, especially those foods that are heavily processed, high in the added sugars. It's a lot more easy to just go into the shop, get it. And in addition to that, we're constantly bombarded with, you know, marketing. There's so many adverts around us, whether you're shopping, watching television, billboards, which you know, are advertising these foods. That's why we say that when it comes specifically to obesity, we have to look at all the angles, you know, what is easy to obtain now, to purchase, what the cost, you know. That's also a very important thing. It's easy to tell someone not to buy the bad foods and buy the healthy foods, but at the end of the day, if they can only afford that bad food, then what do we do? What's the way forward? So I think that's why it's important to understand that the roots of this condition run deep. And if we look specifically at this intergenerational cycle, which is what we really focused on this year, it's important just to understand that there is this intergenerational cycle that does exist. There's been a lot of research now in the last few years that have shown that obesity can actually begin in utero, you know, when a mother, expecting mother, is obese. And this can increase the risk of the baby developing childhood obesity and then later on in life other conditions like heart disease. So that's why we say it's actually very important. We would say that the first point of target would be pregnant women. And especially because, you know, pregnancy is, we see that as a teachable period. You know, women are more open to public health messages. They want to make those changes. They're willing to hear what they can do to give their baby the best start to their life. So there's certain things we monitor Now, in pregnant women, we look at their weight gain, the risk of gestational diabetes. And while it is it's true that, obesity has a genetic component to it, there's so many windows of opportunity throughout the life course where you can actually mitigate that risk. So one, we spoke about targeting the mother when she's expecting, but once the mother actually gives birth, then we focus on, infant feeding methods. So that's where we bring in breastfeeding and how that can actually reduce the risk of childhood and adult obesity. So we just, we're saying that it's something that needs to start from the very beginning, and basically at every stage there's something we can look at, we can intervene at, whether it's at an individual basis, whether it's at a family level or even just a public level. Sometimes you have to look at public interventions as well to try and address the condition.
Kinsa, coming from a dietitian's perspective, I mean, oftentimes I'm sure you've heard many women who are pregnant saying, oh, I can eat whatever I want, because they're pregnant anyway and the weight's going to come up. How important is it that even if somebody is not, clinically obese, but even slightly overweight and they're pregnant, why is it important that during this time that we don't just, go, or even with pregnant as well as breastfeeding moms, there's often this thing like, I've got the weight on me anyway, I'm pregnant anyway, so I might as well just, enjoy myself, so to speak. Why is it important to make sure that at these times in particular, that we become a bit more conscious of the nutritional value of what we're putting into our bodies?
So you're right. There's always this misconception that if you're pregnant, you're eating for sort of two. But that's not true. There's actually very careful guidelines once you fall pregnant of weight gain. Usually in the first trimester, sometimes mothers even lose weight, depending on their symptoms. And it's not that much of a train smash, as we'd say. You don't have to gain excess weight immediately once you fall pregnant. Throughout your different trimesters, there's guided weight gain, whether it's a kg, 2 kgs, but also it your body goes through so many changes. So it's not just about the food. Basically, the baby will take what it needs. What's important for the mother is to just make sure that they're eating the right foods and they're eating it in the right amounts. So obviously, it changes from person to person. They would need that guidance, depending on if they have any underlying deficiencies, any conditions, what their pre-pregnancy weight was. The main thing we want to try and achieve is, to optimize nutritional intake, making sure that they're taking foods that are nutrient dense as opposed to just energy dense. And very important is we want to prevent gestational diabetes, because that is the condition that's been linked to, childhood obesity later on. So it's actually recommended that, women that are actually planning to fall pregnant and even expecting mothers, that they consult, with a registered dietitian who can assist them with that steady and healthy weight gain. Because I think it is, like you said, it's always just this idea that, okay, right, I'm eating for two. But I mean, it's not that. It has to be carefully monitored and carefully, your weight has to be carefully gained throughout the 9 months.
When we have these conversations, I always find there's always something that I would take home, or probably our listeners. And one of the things, the fact now that you're saying, when a woman is looking to fall pregnant or she falls pregnant, one of the people she should be seeing is a dietitian. And I can honestly say that there's probably at least 90% of the people listening to this program who have either had a baby, are trying to have a baby, and have never been told that perhaps you should see a dietitian. And I think particularly for those who may have a bit of excess weight on them already going into a pregnancy. If somebody is healthy, they know their nutritional values, how they eat, whatever, then they know how to handle themselves. But particularly for those who have, this history of weight gain or being obese or having even a few extra kilos on them that, they're not comfortable with, I don't think anyone has said to most pregnant women, you need to see a dietitian and ensure that your weight gain is, you know, is within a range, that you're eating the right nutritionally dense foods. And a funny story, Kinsa, I'll just share with you quickly, is because I went to see someone who recently had a baby, and she said that during the last couple of weeks, the baby wasn't growing as well as they hoped. And so she went to her mom's house and she stayed there, and her mom was feeding her. She said her mom had heard about all of these, you know, fads, like some, like a Bawan diet and this shake and that. So a week later, she goes to her gynae and she says, she obviously checks the weight of the baby, and she says, now she's expecting to have some massive change because now she's been putting all of this stuff, like really stuffing herself with everything that she's been told. And she says, the gynae said to her, that makes no difference. So she said, okay, we've got to stop, because all that's doing is putting weight on me as mom. Mm. And it's not actually impacting baby. So I think, yes, you know, also the pressure from community, society, do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that, it becomes intense. And I think so having someone, like you're saying, a registered dietitian, somebody you can turn to, somebody who, even when they, if, you know, there are issues with the baby, the growth, whatever it is, you guys can actually come in and say, okay, this is how we deal with this problem, you know. I think that's an important space to actually fill for you, hey, Kinsa?
Yes, no, definitely. That's why we say that it's actually advised, you know, if you're planning, of course, whether you fall pregnant, when you fall pregnant, that's all in our hands, of course. But if you are planning to fall pregnant, then it is very important to tick all the boxes. You think about your health, you look at all the other conditions, what runs in the family and everything. But equally important is like you said, your the status of your weight. Because you rightly said, sometimes you tend to just eat everything that, you know, you're told to eat, and you think that it's going to help with the baby's growth, but actually it stays with you, and especially after you've given the birth, then it stays with you, and it becomes even more difficult to get rid of that excess weight. So definitely, before, if it's possible, if you're planning, then to see a registered dietitian, because you know, we obviously have that knowledge of what could go wrong with the growth, or why the baby's not growing, or what's needed. Obviously we work hand in hand with the doctor.
Yes, of course.
But it's very, very important to see the registered dietitian, because we have knowledge of what foods are important during those critical periods, especially within that first trimester. There's rapid growth there, and you have to make sure that you're eating the right foods, like I said, that's nutrient dense. You know, it changes from person to person how the weight go, how you gain weight, but it's very, very important to monitor that weight gain, because that obviously influences not just the baby's growth, but you also, and also after you've given birth. So definitely you highlight a very important point, that instead of taking all the other different advice on the internet or from everyone else, it's definitely safer to see a registered dietitian. I mean, when you fall pregnant, you quickly look for a good gynae, a good doctor. Similarly, it's important to try and get that help from a registered dietitian, because, like I said, it starts from the very beginning. While that baby's growing, in that's where you have the most influence to shape the way they'll eat for the rest of their life and their weight.
And I think also, just to add to that before we take a break, is the importance, and many of us have learned the hard way in terms of, I recently saw that, you know, certain cereals that are pushed into the African continent have got a higher sugar content than those that are pushed into Europe. And these are for babies and for children. And it was just shocking to me. But the idea that we as mothers are meant to know these things, we don't. And I think that's where, when it comes to breastfeeding, when it comes to feeding, when it comes to the early years, that advice from a professional would really make a difference, because I know it's not always possible, because it is a cost factor involved for many people, but perhaps even just, you know, initial phases where children are just beginning to eat, or how to introduce certain foods. I think it's it's such a tough journey that we're on, because everything that our children from babies are seeing is advertising for sugar and more sugar, right?
Yes.
And it, you know, if you can't even keep them away from it, because at the understanding age, they see all of these, and it's just bright and flashy and all these colors that really attract them. So I do think those formative years are probably going to be our winning bets in terms of getting our health in order.
Yes, no, 100%. And that's why I mentioned in the beginning that marketing is a very, very big thing. You don't realize how it actually impacts you. Just, you know, walking into the shop, seeing the aisles, like you said, the colors, and especially for the kids. And you're 100% correct in saying that sometimes, you know, there is a cost associated with sitting down with a professional. But I think that's where organizations like ourselves, the foundation, where we do these interviews, you know, we write articles, we even have a help chat line where we can guide the public, you know, just to give them a little bit of knowledge of the early years. Especially, I mean, I'm very passionate about the first 1,000 days of a child's life, because that's really what shapes their eating habits. And one of the things that we're very big on is food labeling, is understanding what's in a product, having a little bit of basic knowledge, you know, when you're going to the shop, especially with the cereals, like you mentioned, there's just a lot of cereals on the aisle these days. You can get very confused. You don't know which one is good, which one is bad. So just a little bit of basic knowledge on how to read food labels, which really goes a long way, especially when you know you're trying to figure out what to feed your children as they're growing up.
Okay. For now, we're going to take a bit of a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more on this aspect of heart health, obesity, even the sugar sweetened taxes. Let's see how much we can get with this conversation, inshallah, on heart health, obesity, and keeping ourselves healthy. For now, a short break for some ads. Stay tuned.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to New Horizons with me, Sister Faiza Munshi. My guest, Kinza Hussain, a registered dietitian with the Heart and Stroke Foundation of South Africa. We're talking about obesity, its impact on us, and how we can really just move forward in a more positive way, inshallah. Kinza, welcome back once again. Kinza, when we look online, there's so much of information, right? One day it's about keto, the next day it's about paleo, and the next, there's just so many names, I can't even name all of them, right? And then sometimes you look at it and they say intermittent fasting is great for women, and it's, or not great for women, it's not good for menopausal women. Where do we really start? If a person finds that they're obese, they're overweight, their kids may be struggling as well, you know, where should one start with this change of lifestyle in a way that is that they can stay consistent and make sustainable changes?
Yes, no, there's definitely a lot of things out there. You mentioned quite a few of them, but I think the first important thing to just keep in mind is that there's no superfood to make you lose weight. There's no supplement that you can take to make you lose weight. And in addition to that, there's no benefit in cutting out a food group completely from your diet. Every food group, you know, whether it's your starches, whether it's your protein, your fat, your fruits, your vegetables, every single food group has a role in our body. And so depriving our body of it is going to mean in the long run, we're going to suffer. We'll either become deficient, we'll either be low in energy, we might start getting sick more often, we will get weaker. So it's important to just keep in mind that, you know, there's no superfood to help you, and cutting out the food group is not going to help either. The first step would be not to make your decision based on what you see online. Every information, you know, it's there is a lot that you see on the internet, the television. So it would help, you know, to get it verified by a healthcare professional. But why it's important to even just start there to say, okay, I am obese. There are ways to check yourself, you know, if you are obese or not. There's certain measures you can do at home. You might need a little bit of assistance in doing the measurements, but it is possible to identify whether you're obese or not. And then following that, it would be very important, and that's when you would need the guidance of a healthcare professional, to figure out what could be the cause of your obesity. Because like I mentioned, it's not just about not eating correctly, not exercising. That definitely has a major influence, and that is something we do focus on when we're trying to get someone back to a healthy weight range. But it's important to get that root cause, because like I mentioned, it could be genetics. It could be, you know, certain medications that you're taking. It could be life events, sleeps, you know, so there's so many causes that they've found that's linked to obesity. So it's important to firstly figure out what that cause is. And then that's what will need to be addressed. In some cases, you know, you may need to have a multidisciplinary approach to the treatment of this individual. You might need to have your doctor, but your dietitian. You might even need to have a psychologist to come into the picture. So it's important to find out what the cause is, and thereafter then you take the necessary steps. That's when you have a specific diet tailored for you. And as I reiterate, it's never about cutting out a food group. Sometimes things like intermittent fasting may work for someone, it may not work for another person. So, but it's important to do that with that guided help. And at the end of the day, you don't really want to go on anything too extreme, because when it comes to food, it's more than just, you know, feeding your body. I mean, there's so much linked to food. There's memories, there's bringing people together. I mean, it's supposed to bring you joy. The last thing you want is to say, all right, it's lunchtime, but all I can have is lettuce because I'm trying to lose weight. You want to enjoy your food at every meal, every day. So it's important to get something started which is sustainable, something which you know you'll be able to keep for the rest of your life, basically. And something that, you know, the whole family can do together. It's not to say that just one person isolated is on their own buzz and they have to just deal with it. So that's why we say it's not about cutting out anything. It's not about a diet which is short term. It's about changes which you bring into your life, behavior modifications which stay with you throughout your life course, to keep you healthy and at a good healthy weight range.
Yeah, I don't think any dinner or lunch party with lettuce and cucumbers is going to work for any of us. So I think it's really important because it's a cultural thing. It's an emotional, like you say, food is an emotional aspect of our lives as well. Now, we've spoken a lot about the individual's responsibility, the family's responsibility as a mother, as a caregiver, etc. But when it comes to the workplace, is there any responsibility there for workplaces to begin having? I mean, we've seen these over the years where they have wellness programs. What is the role of a wellness program within a workplace to combat obesity? And what interventions have really shown to be effective in this kind of setting where there's corporates, et cetera, getting involved in wellness programs for their staff?
Yes, no, so there's been a lot of, you know, emphasis, focus on workplace wellness. And I think the idea is specifically for sort of the non-communicable diseases, you know, from obesity to heart disease and strokes. So they always say prevention is always better than cure. The understanding is that, you know, you could easily lose workforce due to these conditions. If you compare to any other disease, these conditions can affect the working class. So workplace wellness programs aim to prevent chronic diseases and improve that productivity of employees. And it's also, it's seen to be good programs because it allows the employees to view the access to and provision of wellness programs, you know, as a sign of sort of a commitment from to health and well-being from the employer's perspective. So it kind of works both ways, you know. So there's been lots of interventions. They've looked into dietary interventions, you know, exercise, educational programs, whether you look at individual environmental interventions, multi-component interventions, you know, things like combination of mindfulness and, you know, e-coaching. There's been lots of studies to show different programs and the impact it has had in the workplace. We, as a foundation, are very, very, we take workplace wellness very, very seriously. We will go out into, you know, with companies, whether it's small enterprises, big enterprises, and we give health talks. We do screenings of the workforce, you know, blood pressure, blood cholesterol, blood glucose, weight, height. We counsel them, and if anyone's found at risk, then we actually refer them to their doctor, and we follow up, you know, after a few weeks' time to see how it's going. So that's one of the things, one of the pillars that we actually do is workplace wellness, and there's definitely a benefit in it. It works everywhere. We've done it in schools, we've done it with companies, so it's seen as a way to sort of reduce or try and aim to bring down that burden of these conditions, and especially something like obesity where you can talk a lot about it and people are not aware of what all the different routes and the links that it has. So it's definitely something of benefit. We're always looking to work with the different companies to achieve this.
Yes, I mean, I look at this and I think to myself, like if companies were to have one or two wellness days in the year, it actually pays off the employer more in terms of making sure that their staff is in a healthy way, and then giving them the guidelines. Because if you have someone that is coming into work that is possibly exercised in the morning, has had a healthy breakfast, and, you know, it's very different to somebody having had a donut and a coffee coming into work and is exhausted from having not slept well. And, you know, so the impact then overall, I think it's probably long term that employers see an impact, a positive move. But I would assume that if a lot of the employees are taking on the advice that you and other organizations are giving them, that would actually help the business in so many ways, because each of us feels it. You know, the day you wake up, you've read your fidget sarah and you do some sort of exercise and you've eaten healthy, your day is a lot different to the day you don't do those actions, where you don't wake up in a good space, or from a mind perspective, or even if you grab something sugary first thing in the morning, the day just seems to go in a very different direction.
Yes, no, you're 100% correct. I always say to have a little experiment and then see how you actually feel when you're eating well, you're eating all the right foods, home-cooked meals, compared to just, you know, those heavily processed foods that you just buy from the shop. You will feel a difference in how your day goes. And you're also correct to say that it would benefit the employer in the long term. And that's because obviously the ultimate aim of these programs is to improve productivity of the employees. And it's important to note that, you know, we spend a lot of our time at work. I mean, most of the day goes in work, and at least one meal, you know, is consumed at work. So if there's more effort also from companies, you know, where you perhaps have vending machines with healthier options, or if you're having, you know, you're a company that has lots of meetings in and you're catering, that you have healthy food options that's being catered. Small things like that, in addition to the wellness days, in addition to educating the working force, will definitely have a much greater impact ultimately for that company and that, you know, that's in the spotlight moving forward. Yeah, definitely.
I think something important to speak about as well, but before I speak about this, I know many may be listening to us right now and saying, okay, they're saying obesity, obesity, obesity. I'm a little overweight, but I don't see myself as obese. How would someone sitting at home right now be able to work out what, you know, where they're sitting in terms of their weight? Is it within an okay range, whether it's, you know, or is it moving towards obesity, or are they in trouble? What are some of those markers, or what is the calculation for them that they could perhaps do at home, and measurements that they could do to say, listen, I'm in trouble and I need to see someone about this?
Yes, so the one measure I think I'm sure most people are aware of is the body mass index, BMI. Or BMI. Yeah, so that's basically calculated as weight in kgs over divided by your height in meters squared. But there's ranges for that. So if they say a normal range is if your BMI falls between 18.5 and 24.9. So basically, above, let's say from 25 going up, you'd be considered overweight. But if your BMI is greater than 30, then that's when you'd say, okay, you're in the obese category. However, you know, there's a lot of controversy about BMI. It's the quickest way. It's the quickest calculation. It's often used, you know, a lot of people use it. And especially globally, it's used to sort of compare the status of different countries, you know, the obesity status across different countries. But there is a little bit controversy around the fact that it doesn't take into consideration muscle mass. And someone may actually just be bulky because of muscle, especially if they're training, you know, they're doing a certain type of sport, or, you know, their genetics is just built such that they have muscle. But that's why it's important to do a few other measurements. Some of the measurements you would need the assistance of a healthcare professional, like skin fold, and there's many different machines that have come out these days to help with that. But if you do BMI at home, another measure that you can do, which you might need just assistance, just an extra pair of hands to help you read off, is the waist circumference. So we always say to check that, because that gives you a very nice indication of whether you're obese or not. So there's different cutoffs for men and women. So for men, if your waist circumference is greater than 102 centimeters, then you'd be considered obese. And for women, that number is greater than 88 centimeters. So I would say, along with your BMI, this measurement is, I mean, you just need a simple tape measure and maybe just someone to assist. So
around the belly button, right?
Right around your stomach, and read it at the level of your belly button, and read off that number. So that would be something, those two measures that you could use at home, just to give you an indication. And of course, if you are in the obese category, then you'll immediately start thinking, well, then I think maybe I should just get that extra help and see what's needed. Where can I start to bring this weight down?
I was having a bit of a silent chuckle as you mentioned muscle mass, because I think many of us could say that even though we sit home, we sedentary, we don't exercise, and we eat a lot of junk, that maybe we have high muscle mass. So, but too many of us can't use that excuse. So kids are coming to something really important. I mean, many of us have heard about the sugar sweetened beverages tax, the heart mark endorsement programs. Tell us about these things. What do they mean? And what are the role of these policies in South Africa? Is it, is it there to make a difference? And is it making a difference?
Yes, so I mentioned at the beginning, it's very important to educate the public, to have individual-based education, so that people are aware of which foods are healthy, which are not healthy, what to purchase more of. But I also mentioned that at the end of the day, it's not always just on the individual's responsibility, because sometimes they can perhaps only just afford that food that's not good, that's high in the added sugars. So that's where things like public interventions, such as the sugar sweetened beverage tax, would come into play. This tax is an example of a public mass intervention, and it's the main aim was to address non-communicable diseases like obesity, and they're important because, like I mentioned, because of the different roots of obesity that run deep. If we look specifically to at food, ultra-processed foods, we see them across the globe now, and they're contributing to that rapid rise in obesity. And then things like marketing, there's a complex relationship between food systems and health, with marketing of foodstuffs that have been linked to obesity. So while it's important to just always educate the individual, we do need these interventions so that if they are perhaps purchasing, that food or drink that they can afford, that there is some change to it to try and reduce the burden. In order to, give a comment on whether it's working or not, that stuff, to give a statistic, to give a number, it takes time, it takes various studies. We have to look at, the results over a long period of time to say that something is working or isn't working. But recent studies from different countries, on similar kind of policies, similar public interventions, do have shown promise. So it's something that we have to keep looking into, keep working towards. The sugar sweetened beverage tax is one example, but we also have the salt legislation in place in South Africa, which also works to reduce the amount of salt in across a huge variety of products for the same reason, because we know that a lot of the foods purchased by the average South African, is perhaps not as healthy as we'd like it to be. So those are with regards to the policies. The Heartmark Endorsement Program is something that we at the foundation run. It is approved by the National Department of Health, and it abides by national and international criteria. And it's basically a tool for the consumer. So when the consumer goes shopping and, they're faced with so many different products, it just assists them in choosing the product which is lower in added sugar, in added salt, and added saturated fats, and higher in fiber. So it assists the consumer. And on the other hand, we will work with food companies to try and, change their formulation if it's necessary to get them to reduce that added salt, sugar, and the bad fats. So it's a logo on a heart with a knife and a fork. So if you see that, you know, on a food product, then it means it's gone through rigorous analysis to get that logo to say, okay, compared to maybe the other food products on the shelf, you'll be safe to purchase this one for you and your family.
Kinsa, when I think about our community, right, I think we're very family-based communities. And generally, many people do cook at home. It's not like people are going out and buying takeout every day. So where are we going wrong then? If we are preparing our own foods, trying to feed our families in the best way that we can, we're trying to reduce cost, obviously, because of, you know, buying takeout or whatever. So where then in this process, as mothers, as caregivers, as if there's dads that are cooking and preparing meals at home, but in general, I think the responsibility falls on us as mothers. Where are we dropping the ball in terms of that maybe the way we cook, or what are we cooking, or what is it that we're dropping the ball on as a community and society about what's on our plate that's really not pushing us in a positive direction, despite the fact that we cook 90% of our meals at home?
Yes, no. So I always say, I said before, you know, food is it's more than just, you know, feeding your body. It there's memories attached with it. It brings people together. There's your culture. It's food you grew up with. And a lot of the times, the actual ingredients that we're using is not bad. If we just take an example of a chili bite, for example, that's deep fried. If you look, this is just one example. There's obviously so many different other things. But if you look at the ingredients of that, it's not bad. I mean, most of the time, it's chickpea flour. Chickpeas are, they fall under, you know, plant proteins, which are high in fiber, which have good protein. They have our vitamins, our minerals. It's actually a good ingredient. You may be adding some vegetables in that. I mean, all vegetables are good, or all the different colored vegetables are good. But then it comes down to how we're preparing it. And most of the time it's deep fried in a lot of oil. And sometimes the oil that's being used is also not good. So I think it's just a matter of understanding the different foods. And in most cases, you know, especially the foods we grow up with, the dishes, they're not bad. The ingredients are not bad. It's maybe just how they're being prepared. And very important, the portion sizes, the how much we're eating. For some families, rice might be a very big thing where it takes up most of their plate. And maybe perhaps in one sitting at one mealtime, it might be fine. But if it's something that's happening every day at every meal, it's going to then add up. So we always give a guideline, you know, of how our plate should look, that it should be a quarter plate of your unrefined starches, a quarter plate of your good quality proteins, and most of your plate should be of your non-starchy vegetables. That is the guideline. That's how our plate should look. And of course, how much we eat varies from person to person, you know, your age, your gender, your activity level. But I think most of the time where it goes wrong is how it's being prepared and how much is being consumed at the time. And like I said, in one sitting at one day, you know, it's fine. But if it's something that you keep doing every day on a daily basis, then and it is going to add up. And if we couple that with perhaps not doing as much exercise, and that's another very, very important aspect of, you know, watching our weight and just being healthy, is how much activity we actually get in the day. And people tend to think it's you have to run, or you have to go to the gym, or you have to like a specific sport. But just for general good health, and by that I mean, you know, keeping your weight intact, having good blood pressure readings, managing your cholesterol and your blood glucose, all you need for that really is just 30 minutes of some sort of activity most days of the week, whether it's, you know, walking, whether it's the stairs, whether it's whatever, any sort of activity that gets your heart rate pumping is all we need. And I think that is another thing perhaps we don't take very seriously. And again, it needs to start at a young age to get them to enjoy doing some sort of activity, whether it's on their own, at school, or as a family. So I think from my experience, those are the things that I think maybe we can improve in, is how food is prepared, how much we're eating, and getting in more activity in our day.
JazakAllah so much, Kinza. It's been a wonderful conversation. It brings us to the end of today's program. I think you and I can have a conversation for 2 hours when it comes to health and wellness. But I thank you for your time. There's been a lot of good information, I think, for our listeners. So JazakAllah so much, and I'm sure we'll speak in the future, inshallah.
Yeah, JazakAllah for having me. It was great to be on.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. That was Kinza Hussain, registered dietitian for the Heart and Stroke Foundation. We were talking really about the impact of obesity and also a lot of, you know, just practical advice on how we could make some changes. I think it's really important that we begin to look at the changes we need to make for ourselves, because these changes are going to impact, you know, our kids and generations to come, inshallah. And I think just to be able to have a better, stronger mind, a more focused mind, for our children to be more focused at school and to have more energy during the day, will be enough motivation for us to make the changes. That brings us to the end of today's program. Until next time, from me, Sister Faiza Munshi, it's wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.